It's time for Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, the greatest automotive podcast in the known world, with Ron Foreman, Brady Wright, and Steve Johann. Let's find out what's going on this week.
I'll tell you what's going on this week. You'll notice by the video, if you're looking at video, that there's only two of us. And the reason for that is that Ron Foreman, our co-host, Ron came home from work today, and his canopy that covers his truck was blown basically on top of his shop because they had a lot of wind out where he lives. So Ron's probably not going to be here.
No.
We're going to wait and see if he joins the Zoom meeting, but we're not holding our breath on Ron, and we wish him well. Nobody got hurt. But it did blow out his pellet stove, and his house full of smoke.
Oh, gosh.
He's going to have some cleanup to do, and we wish him well. I said I'd drive over and do it, but it's a 5-hour drive. So,
I'm here in the office, and I'm not going to head over there anytime. But we were talking before the air. Why didn't he have it, down with spikes?
We talked about all of that.
Yeah.
I talked with him about an hour and a half ago.
He'll have a good story
next
week.
Not a happy guy. So it is Tuesday. It's January 26th. It is 2021. Brady Wright and Steve Johann tonight. Ron Foreman, of course, our co-host, fixing his house. Millions of people listening. We all know you're out there, and we really appreciate you doing the like and follow of our Facebook page and our YouTube channel now. And of course, we're on Podomatic, we're on Spotify, we're on iHeartRadio. Now we're on MeWe, which is one of the new social networks. We're also got a presence on Gab.com.
Excellent.
Parler is dead, so we're not going to be on Parler anymore.
Nope.
But we're working on getting with everybody. We're trying to get on Rumble. I think we'll be there pretty quick. No matter where you get your podcasts, look us up. Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust has been around for 3 years. We're coming up on, getting pretty close to 200 shows.
Yes, we are.
That's nice. As usual, we do a segment. The first one we do is called Back to the Blacktop, and that's where Steve comes up with all kinds of cool stuff that he has found from his many, many sources of what's going on in the automotive world. So what's going on this week?
Well, there's two big announcements coming from the new administration. First is Biden vowed Monday to adhere to the strict Buy America procurement policy for purchasing products such as cars and trucks used by federal government. The federal government spends as much as $600 billion annually on procurements. This is a big business partner with all the American car manufacturers, truck manufacturers. And that's good. You're buying America. That's good. So he's just renewing, hey, folks, we're going to keep buying American. We're not going to buy, Mazdas or Toyotas. So good news for the manufacturers. And remember, it's all taxpayer dollars here. So that's keeping our economy afloat. Second, one of Biden's top concerns is climate change, with plans to address tailpipe emissions, fuel economy, and push for electric vehicles, which will be complicated, according to this report, by the Transportation Secretary nominee, Pete Buttigieg, who reminded a Senate panel today the Federal Highway Fund coffers are nearly empty. They aren't. And my prediction is
they aren't.
There isn't. And this is just another way to add more money, add more to the coffers. But no, come on. There's always money set aside for the National Highway Safety Traffic Administration and all the things they do. That's never been
defunded. Unless they want to bleed it off into some other ridiculous fund, which
maybe it could have been. I don't know. But anyway, that's what he's saying. So, they're already setting a precedent. Now, Brady, I didn't know this, but did you know CarMax actually sold new cars?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You did. I thought they only sold used cars.
Oh, no. Yeah, you can buy a new car there.
Well, they've just made an announcement that their 220 outlets will only sell used cars from this point on. They're closing their new car. They're going to sell off all their new cars.
More used cars than there are new cars, and certainly there's more markup that way, so makes good sense, business decision.
Yep, and I always thought it was new used cars, but that was kind of an interesting thing to me, so I learned something. And then, rest in peace, Dave Power. We've all heard of J.D. Power. It is the big granddaddy in the industry. Well, the company that Dave launched a revolution, started in his kitchen with he and his wife, and they helped make the essential part of automotive manufacturing what it is. And the founder just died, but it was all about quality. So they rate individual cars by quality, kind of like what the Consumer Report Guide does. Well, they did it for automotive, and they also were used by, hey, how well do you do as a dealership and all that. But anyway, he passed away in 89, so he got many years in there. And
had a good run.
He did. And the good news for Lotus fans, the company just announced it is set to launch a complete new line of upcoming cars, including their $2 million a pop, 200-mile-per-hour all-electric sports car, slated to show up in 2022. So now, look, here again, I almost didn't want to report this because we can't see something that they're saying they're going to do. But apparently, Lotus was bought out by China's Geely company, which actually owns Volvo, among other brands, and it has promised to continually pump in new money. They've opened up a new manufacturing plant, and we're hopes that this pipe dream will actually become a reality, and they'll have a handful of new models out here within the next year or so. So
money laundering. I'm sorry. I'm sure it'll be exciting. I'm looking forward to it. And you know, Lotus is a pretty time-honored name. They produced some real interesting cars back in the day, so I'll be interested to see what they do.
It will, and it's funny you say money laundering, but you know, I got my IRA set in the Wall Street. Well, Wall Street's probably 70% money laundering, so let's just be honest. It goes on whether we know it or not. And Mazda has just announced it has formally abandoned the idea of high-mileage diesel engines being sold in the U.S. in any other vehicles. They had one slated. It was approved. And I think with this whole kerfuffle of diesel, no diesel, blah, 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 and with the hardcore emissions thing coming up, they're saying, nope, let's just from the day one, forget it.
And that was a big step sideways for Mazda anyway.
Yeah,
That's not where they made their bones, their cars. I mean, it's really not a line that, you know, would work for them. If they had a truck, I could see, okay. But, you know, they don't have one that's competitive, so not a thing. They should stick with sedans and SUVs, crossovers. Yes. They're really, really good at that.
Yep. They got a nice little pickup truck, too. Their little Mazda pickup.
It's okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's not bad.
I mean, my son's got a 92, and it's a great little car, great little truck, and he loves it. I love driving it. And then last here, online auctions are going strong with the first of the year, RM Sotheby's, seeing $35 million worth of cars sold at 90%. Sell rate, which is really good, and led by historic period raced 1955 Jaguar D Type AT at $6 million. So there's money, you know, whenever there is.
Well, people like shopping from home. It's like buying stuff on Amazon, except it costs you $2 million
or $6 million
or six
or whatever. But there's money right now to be had, and there are sectors of the market that have gone down, that have crashed because of. Oh, my gosh. So here we go.
Did you break something?
No, I just launched the video section. So now we're recording.
Good. So our video show, if you're watching the video show, the reason you didn't see it up until now is that Steve forgot to turn it on.
Ta-king.
Hi. How are you? Ta-king. Good to see you.
Ka-king. So anyway, shoot myself in the head there.
Steve is the producer of the show. He's
and
the
I told myself,
guy.
Okay.
He's supposed to know.
I told myself, don't forget to do this. But there was a log. Anyway, I won't explain why. But, you know, speaking of really interesting things, we were talking at the very beginning, you're always announcing where we're heard, where our show's heard.
Sure.
Well, I got a notice from my podcast service provider where I place all of our podcasts originally, and then they get dispersed to 15 to 20 different podcast outfits. Yep. Well, I've got another big one that we're going to be on here shortly, and there's some really exciting news. So here in a week or so, I'll be able to announce where we're also located. So,
very good.
I think it's
Are we talking cool. another service or another country?
Another platform.
Oh, good.
Yep,
oh, good.
Another app.
More the merrier.
It is. And
pretty soon, we will be everywhere.
Well, and
we
I've got
Hydra.
I've got some plans for some interesting things here in the next few months I'm going to be rolling out. And one of them is going to be some clothing.
Oh, nice. We need clothing. Clothing would be good. Well, listen, we really appreciate you tuning in. Coming up on Windshield View, we are going to decide, we're going to tell you how we actually got here. And I'm not talking about Steve and me. Stick with us.
D&L Restoration, a family-owned shop, is looking to add a talented, motivated body technician. If you're tired of working for an organization where good enough is good enough and feel you have more to offer, then DNL may be a great fit for you. The ideal candidate will have a solid foundation in automotive refinishing and be relentless in the pursuit of show quality bodywork, panel alignment, and panel fit. For the list of qualifications and to apply, go to restoreyourcar.com. That's restoreyourcar.com.
This is Jerry Heasley, and you're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, the greatest show I've been on in at least the last year.
Cartoons Magazine is back. You know those crazy car comics from the past. They've returned in the all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of brand new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine full of one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available at your local comic book store, newsstand, and directly through Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com. That's cartoonsmag.com, where you can subscribe to a whole year's worth of fun. Cartoons Magazine, there's nothing else like it.
Attention men under the age of 35. You know what really impresses the ladies? When a guy has a few drinks and later gets pulled over for buzz driving. That could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. There goes let's grab dinner and a movie. Oh, I know. You drive more carefully when you're buzzed. You've proven that hundreds of times. A woman admires that kind of confidence. And you've practiced how to speak if a cop does pull you over. Slowly, clearly, and politely, like, good evening, officer. A woman admires that kind of foresight. And what woman doesn't find it adorable that you call it buzzed even though the law calls it drunk? You could kiss $10,000 goodbye, along with any chance of having a girlfriend. Because nothing says, I'm a catch, more than a guy who lives in his parents' basement and calls it my place.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more alive.
Hey, this is the second half. Well, it's the first half of the second segment of the show. This is the Windshield View. This is where we talk about all kinds of cool stuff that's coming up from the automotive world. And usually at this point, we have a guest, and we have guests all the time. But one of the reasons that Steve and I and Ron, we started doing this show is because we love cars and we love everything that has to do with wheels and, you know, internal combustion engines and all that kind of stuff. And we're glad to be able to share all that stuff with you. But, you know, we got to thinking, and it's dangerous when Steve gets to thinking, because stuff comes out.
Yeah.
Yes. He said, you know, cars, of course, are, you know, a huge part of the American culture, have been since the day. But before there were cars, there were other vehicles that were powered. And before there were internal combustion engines, there was other ways of getting around. Since man has had the wheel back XAD, they've been continually looking for ways to power it, to go farther, to go faster. That's just been the thing, whether it was horses or donkeys or steam or, you know, rubber bands or whatever it was. The quest to move people and goods farther and faster and more efficiently is one of the big reasons why civilization exists and why wars were fought and won and technological marvels happened and got spread around. It's kind of a cool story. So this week we thought, you know what, let's take a look at what kind of started the whole car culture. And of course, you can't do that without taking a look at the internal combustion engine.
That's
and
right.
Steve was turned loose with his research.
Yes.
Computer.
Yes.
And I'm terrified, to be honest with you, to what he's come up with, but I know it's going to be fun. So what do you got, my friend?
Well, I came up with the internal combustion motor has had a profound effect upon civilization. And just like you said, I thought I would do a little brief history of how it came to be. And I think it's very interesting. I came across so much stuff that I had no clue of, and I think our listeners are going to really enjoy tonight. Well, when researching this topic, I discovered a Greek engineer by the name of Hero Alexandria, circa 100 AD, experimented with steam and invented the aeolipile, the first but very crude steam engine.
We had piles.
The aeo.
Don't stop.
Anyway, was a metal sphere mounted on top of a boiling water kettle. Steam traveled through pipes to the sphere. The two L-shaped tubes on opposite sides of the sphere released steam, which gave a thrust to the sphere that caused it to rotate. However, Hero never realized the potential of the device, and centuries were passed before a practical steam engine could be invented. So here we are talking 100 AD, and they already, you know, they already had instruments like musical instruments, tubes, and all that. They had all this technology. Sure. And he said, what if I heat this thing up, this tea kettle? And off he goes. He sees some there. But that was locked away, probably hidden in the
Couldn't figure out a way to use
it. No,
no. There's a lot of technology that gets invented that it's ahead of its time. Like, this is really cool, but I don't know what to do with it. So I'll just set it over here until I come up with a reason to
It was literally 1,600 years, 1,600 years later. It wasn't until 1698 when English engineer Thomas Savery patented the first crude steam engine, which he used to pump water out of a coal mine.
And right. Still, and, you know, work engines
were the
kind of thing that got used a lot in construction and mining and things like you're talking about. But they hadn't quite figured out, well, if it'll do that, if it'll move weights from one place to another, would it not move weights with wheels? Hadn't quite got there. It's fun to watch that stuff.
It is. So by 1712, English engineer and blacksmith Thomas Newcomb invented the atmospheric steam engine, which was also used to pump water from mines. And I think there's this little theme going through there as mining was huge, and water getting in the mine was a huge problem. So they needed a device to be able to pump it out before they would hand bilge type thing and pump it out by water, you know, like they've done on ships forever. Well, then we got something that we can, and all of a sudden they're pulling the water out. Well,
that's
then,
awesome. Hey, before you go on, can you hear the buzzing in the background here?
Yes, I can.
There's some construction going on next door.
Oh, okay.
So just in case you wonder, it's nothing wrong with your set. It's nothing wrong with your computer. It's me.
All right. Well, in 1765, a Scottish engineer by the name of James Watt began studying Thomas Newcomb's steam engine and invented an improved version. It was Watt's engine that was first to have a rotary motion and open the doors to use of the steam engine, which became widespread.
Right. So he was also the guy who invented the first engine crank.
Yes. So he
could James Watt, 1782.
Harness and start making that thing work.
Yeah.
And so he did this, and by the late 1700s, inventors applied steam power to trains and boats and much later cars. So you think about that. Trains became a huge, huge factor in everything.
Not only, well, of course, trains, most of them were coal or steam powered, and
that
was a big deal. But the thing that got us to internal combustion engines was an invention by a French engineer. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, but that's going to be later.
Not much later.
Well, but the
not much.
No. The major challenges with steam-powered engines was their constant need for fuel, as in coal, wood, and water, and the amount of soot put out by the smokestacks.
Sure. The fact that water as a fuel, I mean as a burning agent, it used itself up pretty quick.
Very quick.
You know, so you had to constantly have more of it.
And you had to have a coal car, you had to have a water car, you had to have all this stuff in line. So it opened the doors for gas-powered cousin to enter the picture.
Right.
And so keep in mind, steam has never went away. It has been used even to day to power plants.
And everybody knows the Stanley Steamer, of course.
Yes.
The car that, you know, made that. But he wasn't the first of the steam cars
either. We'll get to that.
Either.
Yeah, that's right. So then today, steam is used for powering energy plants, and their source of energy is coal, natural gas, and primary and or nuke. And then, introduction of the gasoline-powered engine. The first attempt to create a non-steam-powered engine was Abbey Hotfill, described in 1678, an engineer for raising water, once again for raising water out of mines, in which the motive power was obtained by burning gunpowder in a cylinder and cooling the remaining gases with water, similar to that expressed in the earlier forms of the steam engine. The same idea was suggested in 1680 by Huygens, but experiments made by him and later by Dennis Papenware were proved to be unsuccessful. But it wasn't until the distillation of gasoline from coal did the idea really come back.
So petroleum products.
Petroleum products. About 1791, John Barber explained in a patent how a wheel with vanes could be driven by a released pressure of an orifice closed to the vanes. But again, nothing of significance took place. And it wasn't until 1794 that Robert Street applied for a patent and designed the bottom of a cylinder was heated by fire and a small quantity of tar and turpentine was projected into the hot part of the cylinder, forming a vapor. The rising of the piston sucked in the quantity of air to form an explosion. The mixture would go down, the flame for ignition, and the cycle was now formed of the internal combustion of flame, pop up, push down.
Sure.
So then it became successful. By 1800, Philip Lebon patented in France an engine using compressed air, compressed gas, and electricity for ignition. But due to the early death, again, development was pretty much stalled for another 50 years. It wasn't until 1833 by W.L. Wright in England that the gas and air were supplied by separate pumps to a working cylinder. The combination, or the combustion, was contained in a spherical bulbs near the ends of the cylinder, ignition occurring while the pistons were at the end of the stroke. The engine was double-acting, water-jacketed, with poppeted exhaust valves and fly-ball governor. It represented the next generation. And, well, there's our music. Getting into...
We're going to do more of this. He has just barely scratched the surface. Do not panic. We know that part two of the Windshield View is coming right back on Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You just might love the Rad Bastards. We're a family-oriented, nonprofit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough. Real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other build, and cruise like crazy, because that's what car clubs are supposed to do. The Rad Bastards are a new class of old-school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Join us at cruise-ins all over the Puget Sound and on the Rad Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
You're bringing your daughter to her favorite pop star's concert. Do you A, wear earplugs?
Isn't this fun, Dad?
I have a soft pretzel.
B, remember the moment with matching concert t-shirts.
That's going to be $180.
Or we can just take a photo.
C, show her how you used to do concerts.
We're going crowd surfing!
I can't! He's too heavy!
Oh my God! Ow.
Or D, just roll with it.
Woo! Justin! Look at us! We're over here!
Justin! OMG! He just looked... I love you, Justin! I love you!
When it comes to parenting, there are no perfect answers. But that's okay, because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information, contact You Gotta Believe at YouGottaBelieve.org.
Nurse, set up an IV. And you, her boyfriend, you were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie, I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the app.
Yes, we are. We're back in Vehicle City with the second half of the Windshield View on Horsepower Chrome and Rust. And I started talking about the history of the internal combustion engine. And Brady did a little couple corrections for me. So this time around, I'm going to kind of pick it up.
You're going to be fine.
We're going to be fine.
And while you do this, I'm going to feed French fries to my dogs because they're right here.
Yes, folks. He's still living in his extended stay apartment there until his house closes. So
no, it's all good.
Oh, good. That's
it. Give them two. Oh, they like it. Yes,
all
that's
right.
All.
Well, anyway, here we go.
So we left off with you talking about some European guys who had just come up with the idea of a reciprocating engine.
Reciprocating engine
at the top, power at the bottom and so on.
Yes.
But these were, now correct me if I'm wrong, these were motors, engines, that
stationary
at this point have any valves, no way to actually control the power, just in and out basically, right?
Right, right. Okay. Well, their valves in some cases were actually on the outside, external, and they would pump in air, pump in the fuel mixture, and yet they had all these different devices of trying to ignite it, trying to keep the pump going up, going down, going down.
My question is going to be that, and we're now in the early 1800s.
Yes.
So at this point, the way that these things are being ignited is essentially an introduction of fire through a port.
Yep.
So it's, we're getting up to the point where the spark plug itself is being invented. And at that point, motors became really a fully self-contained sort of device. I know you're going to get there, but I just wanted to make sure that people understood. We haven't really got to what classically is called an internal combustion engine just yet.
No.
They're combusting, but it's not all internal, and that's coming up, right?
It is. It is.
Cool. When do we get to Hemis?
Well, that'll part three. It was the well-known Otto engine invented by Nicholas Otto of Germany in 1877, that came about. He built the four-cycle motor, or sometimes known as the Otto cycle. The engine was the first known as the Otto silent, to distinguish it from the free piston engine, which was rather noisy. So these things were clanking. His system was a lot more internal, so a lot more quieter.
And a lot of this was before, you know, efficient bearings and, you know, ways to, I mean, you know, this was real primitive stuff.
Real.
And again, no spark plug per se, so everything was external. And the idea of, you know, intake, compression, power, exhaust, that was just now coming into the fore.
Well, it was. And my neighbor, he's a big proponent of buying these old style single horse gas powered pumps that were used for farms and stuff, and these gigantic piston things. And you look at these things and you're like, that was just one horse, but it was how it was used. And so, the evolution really took place. It was in its design, it proved to be the most reliable and soon established the internal combustion engine on a firm footing. The engines of today are just modifications of the basic four-cycle engine he invented in 1877. Soon the sliding valve was replaced by poppet valves, and the flame ignition was replaced by the electric spark, which is the spark plug.
Right.
And so I've seen...
And that was 1860,
1877. Yep. So, I mean, we're still talking in the 1800s. We're not even into the 1900s.
Right. Barely after the Civil War.
That's right. So then, when did engines be used to propel a vehicle come about? Well, it goes back to William Murdoch, who ran a model steam carriage on the roads of Cornwall in 1784.
Right.
And Robert Furness, who demonstrated a working three-cylinder steam tractor in 1788. By 1800, steam buses were running in Paris. That's pretty amazing.
Right.
But it wasn't until the rise of the steam locomotive that really changed the face of transportation, be it hauling logs for lumber, mills and coal and people. Trains soon transformed the entire planet, because now you could lay the tracks and all of a sudden you had nonstop, huge volumes.
Most of the use for these engines up to this point had been industrial.
Industrial.
I want to say work engines. They were things that powered things that were necessary. Well, like a bus or a railroad train or something along those lines.
A big mule.
The idea of personal transportation,
a little bit later,
hasn't even come up yet.
No,
they
haven't
even come up. And it's fascinating that they would take it from industrial uses, you know, and eventually somebody gets the idea, aha, I need one of these for me.
Well, and Cromwell was doing, like I said, back in 1784, but it was a demonstration.
Yeah, it was an invention.
It was an invention.
People probably looked at it and went, that's crazy.
They adapted it for the tractor much quicker because they could pull things.
Again, a work engine. Yes.
And so while it was taking place, the precursor of the modern automobile was also taking shape in the light steam cars, which were being built in the United States, France, Germany, and Denmark.
Right.
And here's an interesting thing. Did you know that at the beginning of the 20th century, and so we're kind of jumping ahead here, but by the beginning of the 20th century, 40% of American automobiles were powered by steam.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
38% were by electricity and 22% by gasoline.
As a matter of fact, in the LeMay Museum in the south end of Seattle, there is an electric car and the electric charging station that was made and operated, including the charging station, in like 1901.
Yes, we're going to talk.
And it was way ahead of,
obviously,
of its time.
Yeah.
But also, it was ahead of the gasoline-powered vehicles, you know, of the time. The only challenge, of course, was the same ones that Tesla is having now, and that is, how many charging stations do you have? Where are they? And how long does it take to charge the vehicle? But that technology is not new.
No, no. And as a matter of fact, I won't go down the rabbit trail, but let's just put it this way. Thanks to these spare electric motors that were around, R.J. Letourneau turned it into what we know as the earth-moving industry.
Right.
During these early days, the motor car, the gasoline's car, was pretty unreliable. It was noisy and vibrated a lot. The steamer's complications were a thirst for fuel, again, noisy, sooty.
Yeah.
And that's where the electric offered an attractive selling points, notably self-start, silent operation, and minimal maintenance. And so it was the first electrics were the first automobiles to exceed 60 miles per hour in an electric in a race, and that was in 1899.
And again, as cool as that is, it was still a novelty.
Listen,
was still a demonstration piece. Hadn't quite gotten to personal use yet. It's fascinating how that stuff comes.
It was, but at its first popularity, the electric car was hampered by a lack of battery charging infrastructure.
Right.
But by 1910, and prior to 1910, few private homes, even in the cities, were wired with electricity.
Right.
And community charging stations and battery exchange schemes had failed. It wasn't until 1912 that the problem had been overcome, and the electric car had its heyday, with 20 companies competing with each other, and upward of 33,000 electric cars were registered in the United States that year. That's a lot.
It's a lot, but let's put that in perspective. 1912. In 1913, the year after that, there was the first time that more than a million cars, automobiles of any sort of power, were registered in the United States.
That's right.
So a million cars at that time was quite a bit. 33,000 of them were electric. That's an interesting statistic. It's a full third.
As we said.
Yeah.
And here
that's
it says,
a lot.
But it wasn't to last very long, due in part by the same issues as you mentioned earlier, EV makers of today, which is short range, lengthy time required for recharging.
Right.
And with the adoption of electric starters in gas-powered cars, the idea of cranking a car now became a way of the past, much like when they added electric starters to motorcycles, all these new people came in. Well, so by 1920, all the electrics went away. They went the way of the dodo bird, and the gasoline-powered car really took hold.
Well, also, the other piece of that is that big oil began to be a lot more powerful.
Oh, yes.
And you see, that made a huge difference because they wanted to sell petroleum products, and the electrical industry didn't have the infrastructure to do that. So they kind of got, beat up. I was going to back up and ask you, when you were talking about just a second ago, the number of cars that were,
I basically said this, that at, that,
I got it.
Okay, there. The first turn of the century, we're talking 1900, 40% of American automobiles were powered by steam, 38 by electricity, and 22 by gasoline.
It was after that. We after talking about 1912 statistic. This will come back to me later.
Okay.
About
okay.
12 o'clock tonight, I'll go. Hey.
All right. So anyway, so then we need to talk about, when did the first gasoline-powered car really come about? Well, as you said earlier, and we've had this as a trivia question, we all know the name by the initials KB and GD, Carl Benz and Gottlieb Daimler of Germany. and they ran their first car in 1885, which was a gasoline-powered automobile. And they were pretty much...
2 years later, it was for sale on the market.
Yes.
I mean, cars like that were.
That's right.
They demonstrated it in 85, and by 87, they were selling them. Not a lot, but they were. And yeah, I mean, it's hard to think that that name goes back that far.
Okay, so we're talking pre-Revolutionary War, are we not? 1885?
No. Pre-World War One.
Yeah, okay, when was the revolution? I thought it, 1862 it was over with, correct? So
Civil War was 1862.
Thank you. Civil War. Excuse me.
Yeah. We're past the Civil War.
So we're past the Civil War, and all
we're
of a
past
sudden,
the Spanish-American War.
In comes all these, these powered vehicles, and it started transforming the way our life was.
Sure.
And so then you start looking at this, and you go, Ben's first car was 1885, and it moved in the internal powered. Ultimately, it birthed the independent car movement between the steam,
sure,
the gas, and electric. There was three now competing. And then by 1920, the only thing left was the gas-powered. The electrics were pretty much limited to trolleys, buses, and things like that in cities.
They went back to being the work engines that they started to be. But you know what else was a big factor in the gas-powered gas-powered vehicle becoming the pedestrian vehicle, the vehicle for every man? It was racing. It was racing that did it, because the electric cars, they didn't race well. They didn't race them at all.
Actually, they did.
You know,
they did
Michelin
hill climbing in the early days.
It wasn't as popular. Yeah, but it wasn't as popular. By 1901, the Grand Prix, was a thing.
Yep.
And the first one, the average speed that won the first Grand Prix was 46 miles an hour, but it was a gas-powered car. And people liked, according to the lore around the Grand Prix, people liked two things. They liked the fact that they were fast, and they liked the sound.
Oh.
They liked the sound of the motor. Electric cars, let's face it, not all that
it's
exciting.
It's like playing giant slot cars.
Yeah,
which
I mean,
is fun, but
let's face it, gas-powered motors sound cool.
Yes.
And they did back then too. And nobody was using mufflers. So you got the full benefit of all that. Even at 46 miles an hour, it was pretty exciting. And people looked at that and went, that's for me. I got to have one of those.
Well, it is. And if you think about what happened when all of a sudden the next evolution in cars was when Ford modernized the factory.
Oh, yeah.
Assembly line process
made a huge difference. By 1919, he was absolutely fully mechanized in the assembly line, and that changed the universe.
It changed it. It changed everything. It changed how everything was made from that point on.
And it's interesting to note, historically, Fords were not the best car out there at all.
No.
But they were the cheapest, and
there were
a bunch of them, and they could make them fast.
Yes, he could. And because of that, all of a sudden, it changed the face of all the population. Now, instead of horse and buggy, you had a reliable set of
Ford in every garage.
Yes. Now, think about what happened. Is we talked about the gas, and we talked about how Rockefeller saw he became the tycoon. He bought up all of his competition.
Oh, yeah.
And he was ruthless. I mean, ruthless. I mean, the guy is, anyway. Nonetheless, they started laying gas lines and gas fields and pipelines and supported. And then all of a sudden, you had gas stations in little rural towns, because they could fill up these little gas trucks and tanker trucks and take them to these little things, fill up these things.
And a lot of the gas stations were built in conjunction with fuel oil distributors. Guys were, you know, had trucks that would take out fuel oil to the houses and businesses that, you know, powered their stuff by coal oil or fuel oil. And then you could get gasoline for your car at the same place.
You know, and then you started buying your lubricants there, and you started buying everything there. And all of a sudden you have convenience stores popping up everywhere in conjunction with gas station. So, I mean, you start thinking about the evolution. So we just really pretty much banked it right up there to the end. We've got our break. We've got a great story coming up next that Brady's going to tell us about. And we've got our trivia question. So don't go away.
It's a good one this week. Stick
with us. Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. D&L Restoration, a family-owned shop, is looking to add a talented, motivated body technician. If you're tired of working for an organization where good enough is good enough and feel you have more to offer, then D&L may be a great fit for you. The ideal candidate will have a solid foundation in automotive refinishing and be relentless in the pursuit of show-quality bodywork, panel alignment, and panel fit. For the list of qualifications and to apply, go to RestoreYourCar.com. That's RestoreYourCar.com.
This is Mark Mathot from Cartoons Magazine, and you're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
I want to thank my mommy for loving me so much.
For taking me to the doctor when I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom. For taking you to your therapies. For understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiver.
Cartoons Magazine is back. You know those crazy car comics from the past. They've returned in the all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of brand new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine full of one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available at your local comic book store, newsstand, and directly through Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com. That's cartoonsmag.com, where you can subscribe to a whole year's worth of fun. Cartoons Magazine, there's nothing else like it.
Okay, forest animals, kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow, have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. River, how's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man.
I love it. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. Okay. Squirrel.
The forest has been preparing just for you. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org.
It's time for Cars Confidential, and we're back with another story of Fenders, Fins, and Friends. What's up this week, Brady?
This week, I am telling you, Lance Lambert has written words that I am going to say, pretending that I am he. No. This is actually a fun one. This is fairly deep into the book, but every once in a while, it's like, you know, you kind of take that next bite of cereal and, ooh, there's raisins in that
one. Two scoops at every...
This one's kind of got the scoop of raisins in it. This one's called Look, But Don't Touch.
Ooh.
There are two types of people who participate in car shows. Oh, you know where this is going. The car owners and the general public attending the show. Now, the majority of the first type, the owners, they're either a little crazy or totally off their rockers.
Yes.
Middle... The second type, the public, is made up of mostly healthy people with a few nutcases sprinkled in. Most people who display their cars are reasonable human beings who lead productive lives and are kind to animals and will give you the shirt off their back or blouse off their back.
Okay. I don't know about that.
That is, until you touch their car at a show.
Oh, yes.
Then, for some reason, these cars have been around many decades. They'll instantly turn to dust if they're touched by anyone other than the owners.
Yes. Been there, done that. Been yelled at.
I've seen owners almost end up in fights when someone touches their candy apple painted baby. I should know because I'm one of them, he says. I'm not like that, by the way.
I'm
just
not
so
either.
That we're all clear. I don't care if you touch my car. Go ahead. You can put fingerprints on it. It's already got fingerprints on it, and they're mine. Over an 8-year period, I displayed my restored 1960 Thunderbird at about 200 car shows. I once had a father and son walk up, open the hood, which isn't easy, because you have to pull a lever under the dash to pop it open.
Oh,
their defense was that they were restoring a 60 T-Bird, and they wanted to see the engine compartment. You could ask.
That's going a little bit too far.
At another show, I looked over to see a young lady sitting in my car, pushing the radio buttons as fast as she could. I walked over, and as calmly as I could, I told her that the appropriate etiquette at a car show was to look and not touch, and you certainly don't climb into the car and hammer away at the radio. As she got out of the car, something on her bib overalls caught a portion of the upholstery and ripped out a button from the seat cushion.
Oh!
I'm a gentleman who will generally seek out the most non-confrontational way to look at problems. Not this time. I went nuts as I screamed at her for the damage she'd done to my car. She responded by looking at me and saying casually, "Jeez, man, chill out." I had two choices. Her head or walk away.
Yes, yes.
I quickly contemplated spending the rest of my life in prison and decided that walking away was the best option. St. Peter should give me an extra cloud in heaven for that act of composure. So what's the point? Well, it's kind of like she walked up to a stranger's house and entered without knocking, and then being invited to enter. You ask car owners about their cars. You may even be invited to sit in the car. You'll definitely have questions answered by the car's proud mama or papa. A few car owners will even let curious children sit behind the wheel and honk the horn, that is, unless they're wearing bib overalls. But, you know, I can't tell you how many car shows I've been to. You're the same.
Yep,
you know,
yep.
You see people do things, and you wonder, like, okay, did you think that this was, like, a ride at the grocery store where you put in the quarter and you can just get in and pound away on the thing? Because people are crazy. Although, I have to share this story. It's a true story. One of our good friends of the show and one of the Northwest's, you know, nicest people, Carly Brogren, has a wonderful custom car. It's a kit, but it's right. A beautiful car.
Right.
And I won't go into details, but the bottom line is she was at, I believe it was the Greenwood car show, but it was one of the big shows in the Pacific Northwest. And her car was there, and she's very proud of it. It's a beautiful car. And she walked away to get a soda or a coffee or something, and she came back, and there was a guy running his hands over the car. And he wasn't doing anything horrible. He's just running his hands over the surface of the car. He had on a pair of sunglasses, and it was a beautiful sunny day, so she didn't really think much about it until she saw a woman with him who was talking with him in some sort of sign language, and she was touching him. The guy was blind.
Oh.
And she had brought him to a car show simply for the tactile experience, you know, fiddling with that. So there was nobody at the car, and it was really a swoopy, you know, cool looking car.
Oh, it is. It is.
So he was feeling the car, and then they would talk about it a little bit, and then he would feel other parts of the car, and they would talk about it a little bit. So Carly came back and saw this and realized what was going on and talked to the woman, talked to the man, and they said, "We hope you don't mind." She said, "No. Normally, I don't like people to touch the car very much, but you know what? Go do whatever you do."
Yeah.
And the guy ran his hands over the car for a good 15 minutes. She's got some of it on video. It is one of the most beautiful things I ever saw.
Yeah.
It goes to show sometimes it's okay.
Oh, you know, yes.
Wipe off fingerprints. It's not that big a deal. And this was something that this guy would never experience again. And when she told me about the story, I had to say, "Look, you know, your car is pretty swoopy.
No.
It'd be a cool thing
yes.
to run your hands over.
It would."
So sometimes that's not a bad deal. And then, of course, there's the other people who just want to bang on stuff. And we all know who those people are.
Right.
But we're fortunate to have a hobby that allows people to be okay looking and sometimes touching and sometimes not. But if you ask, the likelihood is at most car shows, you're going to get to be able to, you know, probably handle the thing to a certain extent. And you might even be able to get in and honk the horn.
Yeah. And because I've done a couple shows that are on our YouTube channel, there are a couple shows that are me being videoed, interviewing different people with their cars.
Yeah.
And one of the guys, a couple of them, they said, "Get on in the car." And I got shot with me in the car, and I got to talk to the guy, and they were really happy to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, they're being
Most
featured on the thing. But I want to touch. Sometimes I want to touch a vehicle because I'm going, that is such a phenomenal paint job.
Sure.
And I want to feel the surface and see that I'm a very tactile type person. Ask my wife when we're walking around in Vegas, I'm tapping the walls to see which ones are fake and which ones are real. I mean, she'll go, "What are you doing, Steve?" I'm going, "Is this plastic or
That's
is this
the reason you're doing it?" Okay.
Yes, I do that. Cause I'm very tactile. I like to feel and touch, but, I had a situation. We were out filming a show and I was moving around between two cars, and there was some stuff there, and I brushed up against this other guy's car. I was trying to look at the other guy's car, and I kind of brushed it up, and the guy's like, "Who you touched my? Oh, you, I think you did something to it." And I'm like, "I didn't mean to. I didn't even know that." And sometimes when you have things on your back, like a little backpack or something, it can brush along. And when you only have 3 feet between cars,
then you don't go in there.
Well, you have to be very careful.
It is your responsibility as a car show, you know, spectator, not to drag your backpack along somebody's car. And, you know, again, sometimes you want to get in and take a look. Ask first. It's always okay to ask
and
first.
And there are the incidences where people are riding around on bicycles and other things.
Sure.
And, well, I got scrapes along the side of my cars because my kids, being young, just right between the cars.
Well, but that's one thing in your driveway. It's something else at a car show.
Yeah, and you don't want to confuse the two.
That's right. Hey, we really do want to thank Lance for letting us read out of his book. I know he doesn't mind too much, but it's nice to play a little fun with him while we're doing it. All of the books, Fenders, Fins, and Friends, and Grins, Gears, and Gasoline, they're available at Amazon. You can get them at Barnes & Noble. He had on his Facebook page the other day another bookstore that you could get. Some people are off Amazon lately, and now I can't remember which one it is, but I'll find it. You can also go to the Vintage Vehicle Show website and order them through there if you really want to. Your bookshelf wouldn't be complete without them, and we know that. So listen, the Nathan Lipinski Weekly Trivia Question is coming up next. Don't go anywhere.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil.
It only takes a moment to make a moment.
Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
We'll be back with more Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Looking for a job worth talking about? Teaching is creative, collaborative, and intellectually challenging. See why teachers have better work stories at teachdfw.org and learn more about becoming a teacher. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car-crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
I'm jumping in with my clothes off!
Most party fouls are pretty dumb, but if you decide to drink and drive underage, you could lose your license and your freedom. Learn more at ultimatepartyfoul.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Help us if you can. You're an El Camino, El Camino man.
Hey, this is Around the Wheel. Welcome. This is where we talk about the upcoming events and all kinds of other cool stuff that's happening around the country. And... the Nathan Lipinski Weekly Trivia Question, wherein you may very well win your very own personal name on our certificate of winner of the trivia contest, and you could get your Horsepower Chrome and Rust Barn Find Dust certificate. And
we know
that if you pour the Barn Find Dust on your vehicle, it will be worth four times as much because they'll think you found it in a barn. And last week, what were you doing over there? You were just fiddling around with
I was pouring the...
Pouring the barn find dust, I see.
Yes.
The invisible dust.
The invisible dust. Because it is a virtual award.
So last week's question was pretty cool. I'm disappointed we didn't get an answer.
Oh, no.
I know. Usually we do, but I think I'm putting it down to the election. People were weirded out by the election.
Yep.
The first of the modern cars to have power everything. And modern cars, okay? They had aerodynamics design. They had stable suspension, steerable headlights. That car is nearly lost to history. They only made, let's see, I think they made 51 of them, and there's only 12 left.
Oh, yes.
And that was the 1948 Tucker Torpedo.
I had a feeling that was what
it was a classic. There are a few around. Yep. If you ever have a chance to see one, please do, because they are absolutely, it was an innovative car. It had power and aerodynamic design. Very good price too. It was a really good price for what he was offering. And the big three killed it. They wouldn't let him do it. And Preston Tucker was a visionary guy, and he died penniless because of it. However, even though we didn't have a winner to this one, next week's question is a pretty good one, and I think we're going to get somebody on this one. This is actually kind of a salute to the stylist who designed the visual cues to almost every Chrysler cab forward and curvy design over the last 15 or 20 years. I mean,
oh,
he was kind of responsible for the look of the new minivans. But it was one guy, and if you know who that was, you too can get your name on the certificate for the Horsepower Chrome and Rust Barn Find Dust. You can email us at contact@horsepowerchromeandrust. In fact, you can email us for any reason if you want to. Tell us what you want to see on the show, or suggest a guest, or pimp your own project that you're doing. That'd be great. You can also go to the website or the Facebook page and just send us a message or a text. It'd be great. If you know who the designer of almost every modern Chrysler curvy cab forward kind of thing was, give us a shout. Let us know, and we'll give you the answers.
Is he still alive?
Because he is. He is.
I might have to try to track him down and get him on the show.
That would be kind of cool.
That would be cool.
You could get a hold of him.
I love trying to find those kind of individuals that you don't kind of think about, but you're like, someone had the...
Somebody did it.
Somebody
did
that.
Somebody. Hey, last week we talked a little bit about the off-road event from Avance, and
yes,
it was on
yep.
the 23rd. It turned out to be a big success. I had a couple of guys who went emailed me and said everybody had a grand old time. It
excellent,
was
basically
about a five-hour deal, and up in the mountains.
Was there
of the
much
North
snow, or is it just pretty much?
Apparently just some, but nothing that
oh,
was
yeah, but it's fun,
caused
then
it to happen. Yeah, that's the whole point of going off-road. So, yeah, if you've got an event that's coming up, let us know what it is. There's going to be a big one coming up in North Idaho. I'll tell you about that one next week. We're kind of doing the planning.
Cool.
Some of it this week coming up. And we're getting up to where we can almost look over the top of the hills and see car show season. So we'll be talking about some of those around the country,
will.
Too. And if you have one that you're going to do, send it to us at Horsepower Chrome and Rust, and we'll be happy to produce it, or not produce it, but promote it and share it with everybody else.
Well, I can tell you this, that talking with Dennis Roth, who's going to be a future guest on the show.
Oh, right.
He was telling me about some of the coolest little events that he's been to all over the United States, even during the COVID close down, that a lot of people said, screw it, we're having it. And they've been some of the best things happening.
All right. Well, hey, we know that you're out there. We really appreciate you listening. There's over a million of you every week, and we're glad you're there. We had a great time kind of giving you the beginnings of the history of the internal combustion engine. We're going to do more of that shows down the line. Check out the website for our upcoming and past shows. For Ron Foreman, who's still picking up his carport, Steve Johann, I'm Brady Wright, saying keep your hands on the wheel, your eyes on the road, your foot to the floor. We'll see you next week on another Horsepower Chrome and Rust.